across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
With real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin, this is Up North News Radio, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. It is 7:06 on this Friday morning, August 16th. One more show here in Chippewa Falls before we take the show on the road for the Democratic National Convention in Chicago next week. We've got a full show, a full hour for you on this Friday. Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, will be along shortly to discuss some legal matters, including the arrests of two doctors, a personal assistant, and others who may have played a role in supplying the drugs that led to the death of actor Matthew Perry. Mark Jacob is off. Jennifer Schulze will be in, another veteran Chicago journalist. We will be talking about that thing that Donald Trump advertised as a press conference and really was pretty much anything but. And then we'll have Dan Schumacher talking about sports as well. But those three can barely hold a candle to the main event here on Fridays. And that, of course, would be Brittany Merlot because she's got the forecast. She's got the forecast for the weekend. Woo-hoo. Who wouldn't want to have that? But first, of course, always upstaging Brittany, or I should say introducing Brittany, will be Rob from Tigerton. The opening act, yes. The opener is Rob from Tigerton. Says, good morning. It's cloudy, foggy, 66. Half inch of rain yesterday. I'm enjoying my couple days off from mowing, doing some work around home. I'm an independent worker, so it's my holiday. You love when the listeners play right along. He knows it's National Independent Worker Day, weaves that right into the bit. Rob, well done. Sunrise, 5:59, sunset, 6:01. Is that right? No, sunset, 8:01. He corrects himself on there. There you go. Yeah, like, no, not that quite yet. But yeah, it's the day is shrinking, but we're not depressed about that. There's still August left. We still got a couple of weeks there, Brittany. How's the weekend looking?
Well, it's looking a little wet here today for the afternoon and evening hours. Now, of course, we are waking up to a lot of fog out there, misty conditions, cloudy skies. There are some sunspots, and we'll see more and more sunshine through the southern half of the state through the early afternoon. But then as this low pressure system, what's happening is it's going to be scooting across the Northwoods throughout the day today. So this means scattered showers and some storms will definitely be firing up, mainly around lunch and continuing to roll towards Lake Michigan as we go through this evening. Now, that is when they kind of line out and look a little stronger out there. So, of course, there is a marginal risk for them to be severe, and that, of course, is going to be on the east side of the state for this evening. Main risks would be heavy downpours. We got about a half an inch to an inch that could come down in these. Some small hail is possible and also some gusty winds. Otherwise, high temperatures today will be in the mid-70s up north, low 80s down south. And for tomorrow, we are looking at spotty showers still swirling around this low pressure system. It'll finally be over in Michigan. So this means the winds will be pulling out of the north. It'll be a touch cooler out there. But again, a mix of sun, clouds, and showers for our Saturday. Highs will be in the upper 60s north, mid-70s south. And the best day of the weekend falls on Sunday. It's going to be sunny and summery. We're going to go back into those 80s for high temperatures.
Oh, good. We needed to get back. We can't be done with the 80s quite yet here. You know,
not just yet. A few more left in there.
Fall colors will be pretty and all. But and also, you know, you can bank on this forecast. Brittany Merlot is nothing if not painfully honest. I asked her off air, and maybe we'll recreate the moment here. Brittany, you doing anything fun this weekend?
Nope. Zero plans.
Oh, my God. You're so lucky.
Lame.
Oh, Brittany, no. Let's do it. No fun.
Brittany, I don't know how old you are, but there comes a time in your life that when someone asks you what you're doing this weekend and you say nothing, the sense of accomplishment and pride that washes over your body.
It feels good.
Because you know that anything can happen, but also nothing can happen.
If nothing happens, and it might even be okay.
Yeah.
True.
But again, that starts at a certain age, and we know Brittany's not there yet because fun's going to follow her wherever she goes. You'll have something fun to report on Monday morning.
Probably.
And if not, Rob just chimed in from Tigerton. Lumberjack days next weekend.
Oh, so, love that stuff.
Is that in Tigerton?
Yeah, it says Tigerton Lumberjack Days. I'm sure there's more than one Lumberjack Days.
Okay. Well, yeah, because the Lumberjack competition just happened, and we missed it, and I really would love to go to... I'd love to be around a bunch of guys who just look like me.
Yes.
Also, wouldn't most people.
Yeah. Shout out to Robin Tigerton for doing the most Wisconsin thing, which is had a couple days off from work, so I worked around the house.
Yeah.
True.
It's exactly what we do. All right, Brittany, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks. You too, guys.
Also wanted to acknowledge Roger writing in. He was the first to tip us off about the passing of Greg Kinn from the Greg Kinn Band at the age of 75. Peter Marshall passing away this week at the age of 98. And he, too, wishes Madonna a happy birthday today, turning 66, and notes that Desperately Seeking Susan was the first movie he fell asleep watching.
What a weird factoid.
Look, everybody's got little things they remember from their life, including the first movie you fell asleep to.
I love it.
Yep. It's 7-12 right now. The Brewers managed to split the series with the LA Dodgers after a win again last night. So the Dodgers won the first two games of the series. The Brewers took the second two. First inning home runs from Jackson Churio and William Contreras for a 6-4 victory. Devin Williams once again ending the game by striking out Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani. So the Brewers split that four-game series between the division leaders, but the road doesn't get any easier for the Brewers because now the Cleveland Guardians come to town, one of the top teams in the American League. Cleveland in for a three-game series. The first pitch tonight is 7:10 at American Family Field. The pregame will be at 6:35 on Civic Media Stations WRCE in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, and WISS in Oshkosh. Don't forget, Up North News has a daily newsletter that you can subscribe to. Christina Laurie puts that together for us, delivers it every morning for you. And let's see what's in today's episode. The brat stand, she says, few things are more quintessentially Wisconsin than the brat stand, especially the one on the terrace on Lake Mendota, which turns 40 this year. And she notes some factoids about the brat stand on the terrace. On any given day, staff serve about 1,000 brats, 800 burgers, 500 vegan brats, 15 gallons of sauerkraut. Every summer, they go through 50,000 brats, 31,000 burgers, 7,000 vegan brats, and more. More little trivial notes. Also, a survey of some of Wisconsin's best brat makers is in today's newsletter. And in the news section, we talk about poll workers. Poll workers are the backbone of Election Day. They are your neighbors and friends. They help maintain order. They really are the infrastructure of an Election Day that has always been smooth and safe and accurate and not anything like what some people are saying in order to undermine election confidence for their own selfish means. And poll workers are always needed. So learn how you could become a poll worker and learn more about the job. Again, sign up for our newsletter. That's over at upnorthnewswi.com. I want to hit on something that we talked about last hour with Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Vakil, and that would be the savings that's coming about because the U.S. government can finally negotiate bulk pricing with drug makers for the many millions of people on Medicare. Because this was something in the Inflation Reduction Act, which, by the way, no Republicans voted for, under the terms of the bill, Medicare starts with 10 very expensive older drugs that still have no generic competition, despite being on the market for at least 9 years. The first round of drugs includes those that prevent blood clotting, reduce the risk of stroke, they treat diabetes, heart failure, blood cancer, and more. Rolling Stone writes that the 10 drugs have all been sold in other countries at far lower prices. For example, Januvia, a pill by Merck that helps adults lower their blood sugar levels. A 2019 report found that Januvia was priced 1,000% higher in the U.S. than in international markets on average. And why are we paying prices 1,000 times higher than other countries? It's not like we didn't help Januvia get the pill developed. you, the taxpayer, through the government, provided funding through the National Institutes of Health, provided Merck $228 million to help fund research prior to Januvia being approved. But for 20 years, Republicans said, no, you can't. They blocked the government from negotiating bulk pricing with drug companies. And that's finally changing under the Inflation Reduction Act. It just reminds me that sometimes the volume of everything that's going on gets to be so much that people tune out. If they had only like one or two things to really hone in on, maybe that would help. For example, with Donald Trump, there's so many things he's either been, you know, wrong about or ineffective on, that if you could just hone in on, say, one, that he promised a healthcare plan in 2 weeks and we're still waiting, or that he promised a big, beautiful infrastructure bill and we're still waiting. If you talked about nothing else but that, you'd say, this guy can't get it done. Well, the same goes for the Biden-Harris administration. Frankly, if this had been the only thing they got done, this program that just these first 10 drugs will save taxpayers, will save you and me, will save taxpayers $6 billion a year, that would be enough to run on. The Inflation Reduction Act overall would be enough to run on. The bipartisan infrastructure law would be enough to run on. The massive, long overdue investment in infrastructure in this country. The Chips and Science Act, which is bringing back high-tech manufacturing all across the country, including here in Wisconsin. And instead, we all get caught up in the many, many things that are out there, the news of the day, the latest insults, the latest accusations. And I'm hoping that we are playing a role in helping put at least a bit of a focus. Let's not call it a laser focus. We're not that sharp. But at least every now and then, bringing in these specific examples of things that are getting done or things that are not getting done. And if that helps you not just to be a more informed voter, but maybe helps you with other people who turn to you and say, who are you voting for this time? Well, then I hope that you'll think that this was time well spent. And if this wasn't, wait till the next segment when we bring on somebody far smarter. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel is going to be along. We'll talk about legal cases that are in the news, including arrests related to the drug-related death of actor Matthew Perry. Wherever you're listening around Wisconsin on this beautiful Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel joins us, as he does every Friday at this time, to in part preview his Saturday morning show, Amicus, a Law Review, Saturday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media stations around Wisconsin. Learn more over at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. Jim, good morning. How are you?
Pat, always good to be with you on a great Friday morning and talk about important things in all of our lives.
Yes. So there are definitely some Trump case updates that we can get to here. There's also an abortion-related law, a restriction in Montana that is worth mentioning. But we're going to start with something that just about everybody can relate to because so many people watched Friends. They were aware of the tragic loss of Matthew Perry. They were aware that he basically faced a near lifetime of addiction. And ultimately, there was a drug called ketamine that contributed to his death. And I have to be honest, Jim, I thought that that might be the end of it. Not that I didn't think law enforcement would take it seriously, but, you know, maybe they wouldn't find anything that actually rose to criminal wrongdoing. But there was a press conference yesterday where we learned that authorities do, in fact, suspect things that rise to the level of criminal wrongdoing, leading to, was it five arrests, including two doctors and his personal assistant and somebody known as the Ketamine Queen of Hollywood or something like that. So basically, Jim, we've created a new Hollywood story here surrounding the death of this beloved actor.
We have. And frankly, I think all of us had the same sense that this was obviously tragic. A well-known and I think much admired star out there who was falling to a drug addiction. He wrote about it in his memoir. He was very candid about it. But this happened way back in October. And sometimes we forget that it takes a long time for investigations, especially of this type, to percolate up. And ultimately, This is a federal case. This is the U.S. attorney, United States attorney, U.S. Department of Justice announcing these federal drug charges, not to say that it wouldn't be serious if the state prosecutors were doing this, but this has attracted the attention, obviously, the Drug Enforcement Administration, of state investigators, federal investigators, and again, now pending in the federal court out there in California. The things I note especially about it, again, the ketamine, something that we are vaguely familiar with, but it underscores once again the proper uses of this drug and also the wildly improper uses of it, and plainly Matthew Perry addicted to it. But also beyond the specific lessons that come from this, fascinating that the authorities have also released a lot of information about the underlying case here and plainly establishing this theme already that these particular people, again, you've got it just right, a personal assistant, we've got two doctors. One of them, as you said, the ketamine queen. Another one, Dr. Salvador Plasencia, known as Dr. P. All these folks, some of whom have pled guilty already in this and plainly cooperating, but all of them plainly motivated by money, which makes the case especially horrific. And also when it comes to presentation, compelling. We've got this information already that one doctor said to another that, yes, Mr. Perry will get some ketamine. They said, I wonder how much this moron will pay for it. Let's find out. I would offer that those things, as tragic as they are, and they are indeed that, are also very compelling to establish for a jury one day if this goes to a trial, how horrific this behavior was. We're animated by money, and that's plainly what all drug conspiracies and distributors are all about, but horrific in this instance. And then also kind of the narrative piece under this, that this continuing engagement with him and others, a real conspiracy to get this money, to get him more drugs, huge amounts of drugs injected, obviously with some voluntary level, but also some of it indicating perhaps not multiple injections. It is an horrific story the prosecutors are already telling, and one, of course, that's also not only legal, but as you said at the top, Pat, also a compelling story for all of us about the horrors of drug addiction and what this does to America.
That it can happen to anybody, no matter what kind of level of fame, no matter how much money you have, but that it's not just the celebrity. It's the people who are the suppliers as well. I mean, when you reduce somebody to if you're a doctor and you reduce your morals to the point of saying to another doctor, I wonder how much this moron will pay. It just tells you how much the money has taken over everything that has made you a doctor, you know, the training, the compassion and everything. And you've become addicted to something just as much as the person addicted to the drugs. And it's the job of the legal system to, you know, ensure that person is properly prosecuted so before they can harm again.
Right. And we've got, especially to that point, and especially notorious and famous here, victim. And so we all know about him and recall him well from friends and other appearances on big screen, small screen. But it also indicates, again, the materials here, that this was not a one incident case involving just Matthew Perry, that these people, again, when you're identified as the ketamine queen and otherwise, these people are supplying drugs to a lot of people, including other celebrities. Interesting to see if some of that also comes out during the course of this, not to expose their own, again, drug addiction. I think we all recognize is a healthcare issue. It is a disease, as is any addiction. But again, the nefariousness of this cannot be overstated. And I suspect we'll hear more about these particular people and things they did to victimize many people beyond Matthew Perry.
Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santella is with us here. Let's switch to Wednesday's ruling by the Montana Supreme Court, which should not be a surprise. Even in conservative states like Montana, ruling that minors do not need their parents' permission to get an abortion in the state. This is really nothing new in terms of minors having a right to privacy when it comes to issues involving their body, Jim. But, you know, we're in this political environment where, you know, you sometimes wonder how these courts are going to rule.
Right, exactly. And so, again, another important abortion decision coming out of a major state, indicating once again that although the Supreme Court did indicate that we're not going to address these issues anymore at the federal level, notwithstanding they were doing just that this past term, The issue does not go away. And we're also getting exactly what an awful lot of people indicated at the time of the Dobbs decision, this patchwork approach to things. We've got the one of the justices saying, we acknowledge that the state has a substantial interest in preserving the family, protecting minors. However, when weighed against the right of a minor to make the most intimate and personal decision of whether to carry a child to term, the interest expressed by the state must be furthered by and substantially related to the legislative purpose itself. Legislation has to be narrowly tailored to meet only those legitimate goals. That's a terrific articulation of balancing here. And it would offer that anyone who's interested in this debate, again, as it continues, take a look at that opinion. It gets it right. And it does the legal decision. I recognize this is heavily laden with politics as well. But the legal aspect of this is right, the balancing decision, the importance of a decision-making process, and yes, the importance of minors making these very difficult lifetime decisions as well. This opinion dripping with humanity as well, which is a very good thing to see among our judiciary.
And the other thing that always has to be said in these cases, when people talk about, well, parents' rights, and I don't know why so many people lose sight of this, but not every parent is kind and compassionate and looking out for the best interest of the child. And that's why we have a legal system to look out for children who are in these kinds of situations. We don't have time to cover that in the hush money case for Donald Trump. Judge Mershon is still signaling that he wants to do the sentencing of Trump on Thursday, the 19th. So we're going to continue to follow that. But if you want to hear more about this and all the other things we've talked about and much more, you then get your radio turned to Amicus, a law review. You can hear it Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 live, and then again on Sunday mornings across the Civic Media Radio Network with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. Jim, always a pleasure. Have a wonderful weekend.
It is a pleasure, and enjoy and report well from Chicago next week. We'll look forward to those reports as well, Pat.
Thank you, sir. I'm looking forward to it. Jennifer Schulze is coming up next. What the heck was that press conference thingy? After this, you're up north. Friday morning, 7:34 here on Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Mark Jacob is off today. Jennifer Schulze joins us now. I like her billing on her Twitter file here. Journalist talking journalism, formerly of King 5 in Seattle, the WGN Morning News, WCIA, NBC 5 in Chicago, ABC 7 in Chicago. What's the proper term here, Jennifer? News nomad, maybe?
Let's go with that one today.
Sure, it works. She's like Mark, a Chicago news veteran, and we're very fortunate to be able to talk to her from time to time as well. Again, being old grizzled veteran journalists as we are, I guess excitement is the wrong word, but I'll ask it anyway. Are you excited for the convention coming to Chicago?
I am. I love politics, so I think all that's amazing. I was running the WGN newsroom during the last convention in 94. Was it 94, Pat?
96.
Yep. And so I was really deep into it. And, you know, it's quite a thing to be a local news operation when an event like that comes.
Well, it had to be even more so because, if I'm not mistaken, that was the first Chicago political convention since the 1968 one, which was riddled with violence and things. So that had to be both exciting and a bit of an anxious time there too.
Well, yes, but no, because this is what I think. I appreciate the coverage, even like I saw some today that was like, well, ghost of 1968. And I have to say, I just don't really think that's true. And I don't think it was true in 1996. I mean, that's a long time between conventions, generations of journalists, generations of politicians, you know, have replaced all the people that were there for that one. That doesn't mean we are ignoring our history, but I don't think it's hovering over us like a lot of storytellers would like to think. I just don't think that. You know, Chicago is not what it was in 1968, and it's not even what it was in 1996. you know, it's a big grown-up right. city that knows how to do stuff. And this event will be, I think, I'm sure it will be done really well and the city will be showcased. But I'm excited about it because I don't know about you, Pat, but I continue to be just almost dumbfounded by how many people don't know anything about Chicago and have not even been here. I can't tell you how often it happens to me where somebody says, I didn't know it was this pretty.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know right. you were on a lake. I didn't know there were beaches. I thought it was, you know, frankly,
they thought it was everything that they hear on talk radio, the same yes. thing that you hear about Milwaukee and Minneapolis. Yes. And I always love when people put up pictures of just a beautiful day. They're at one of the lakes or the beaches or downtown, and they put up something sarcastic like, yep, just another day here in the crime-riddled city of such and such. Please don't come, because yeah, so they know that these are beautiful places that conveniently get trashed. Not that bad things don't happen, but it's the political exacerbation of it.
There's such a ongoing attempt by Republicans, and particularly Donald Trump. I mean, let's be honest, he is leading the attack on Chicago and has for years. And but even separate from that, I find, you know, we aren't a place that everybody always thinks of, that, you know, people go to either coast or they'll go up to northern Michigan or northern Wisconsin. But Chicago, a lot of people haven't been here. And I never understand that. It is a fantastic place with so much to do. It's gorgeous. And so I think what I'm excited about for the convention is to have worldwide media here and hopefully not talking so much about 1968, but talking about Chicago in 2024 and what, you know, like every place, like you said, it has its issues. Every place does. But it is a spectacular and I think somewhat surprising place for most people who come here. And I hope that some of that's translated through some of the visual images of the city and the convention coverage and the actual discussions about it. Because, you know, Chicago is doing pretty well. It's a wonderful place to live. And I hope people get a sense of that. So I'm always excited when people come and can see that we are not the meme or mm-hmm. the line in somebody's attack speech, that we're really something else with a, you know, like I live in a neighborhood outside of the downtown, a probably 15-minute drive from downtown, where it's just homes, residential homes with yards and stuff. And people don't understand even that Chicago has that. And somebody say, well, do you live downtown in a big high rise and all of this? And I'm like, no, you know, Chicago's a city of neighborhoods. And they're gorgeous and they have all kinds of things to do, a lot of variety, you know, and people just don't know that. So again, I hope people coming here and watching the coverage will take away at least a little bit of that.
Yeah. Well, that convention is going to be filled with folks talking about Vice President Kamala Harris, who will get the nomination, accept the nomination at the convention. And of course, the former president, Donald Trump, who had what was advertised to be a press conference. It was certainly anything but that. And I liked that how on social media you posted before the news conference began a media wish list for the Trump news conference. And I don't even have to go through all the items without first acknowledging that, you know, when you ramble for an hour before you take the first question, it's not a press conference. And then when you don't answer the questions, it's not a press conference. But let's focus this on the media. Your wish list was that the reporters' microphones would be turned on, ask important questions with follow-ups, insist on actual answers, don't settle for lies, fact-check Trump in real time, be honest about his gibberish, and don't do props, do journalism. This is a very solid and not at all too much to demand list of the media. If you, to the extent that you exposed yourself to this news conference, quote-unquote, yesterday, how'd they do?
Well, I watched the whole thing, and then I went back and watched parts of it again. So have had more than my share of it, I have to say. So you're right. He talked nonstop in front of a stage set of groceries. And I want to point out it was 90 degrees in Bedminster yesterday, and he had raw meat sitting out on a table for over 2 hours. And everybody from the Midwest knows if you, you know, you don't do that.
Well, but can we also just get to the irony of talking about inflation and the economy, as for the second time in as many weeks, you hold a news conference at your country club,
right?
You know,
which costs $350,000 to join. But
yes,
sure.
But again, he's very in tune with the average consumer. But go back to the news conference.
So it was I counted because I watched it a couple times. Seven questions from five people, three of whom were not reporters. So, you know, he gets to pick who's in the crowd and who's asking the questions. By my count, there were only half the questions were from actual news reporters. I will say it was a better outing than the one last week at Mar-a-Lago, in part and only because of this basic fact that the reporters had microphones so you could actually hear the questions they were asking, as if that is such a low bar. It is stunning.
Right.
There really was not much else that met my wish list. There were two follow-up questions, but Trump, he's asked a question and then he doesn't answer the actual question. He's asked a question by a Fox reporter about Kamala Harris's proposal she's unveiling today about price gouging, and his entire answer is about her position on fracking. So there, and no one then has a chance to come back or takes the opportunity to say, yes, sir, but I was asking you about price gouging. And that's part of the problem. It is a runaway train, and reporters don't seem to know or have the desire to say, yes, but I wanted to ask about that.
There seems to be, in my past, there always seemed to be that one reporter who a president almost enjoyed sparring with, but was kind of a burr under their saddle. It all started with Dan Rather playing that role for Richard Nixon during Watergate.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Donaldson mm-hmm. certainly played that role to Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it was necessarily Britt Hume when he was at ABC, but he was definitely one who was always antagonistic with mm-hmm. Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody. Is there anybody like that playing that role for Donald Trump?
No, and I've read a few things that seem to indicate that one of the reasons may be that the Trump campaign actively and aggressively ices reporters out of access and says you cannot come to any more of our events. And I think that instead of calling that out and being more vocal about how that's just not a great issue, and also maybe saying, okay, if this person can't come, we're going to have this guy go or this gal, they seem to pull back a little bit so that they can be there in the first place. But when they do that, you know, they're not really doing their job as well as they can. I don't see anyone who feels like they can even almost ask like the follow-up question, let alone push back on anything. You know, he goes on these rants. I mean, I timed one of them. He was asked a question about did he need to, you know, why was he bringing on new people to his campaign, and did he need to change the tone of his campaign? Because there has been a few stories about that Republicans wish that he would tone down the attacks. And his answer went on for 15 minutes, and it devolved into Hillary Clinton. And
that's right. That's the part where the Hillary Clinton thing came
yes.
up. And again, I'm not there. Okay. I don't work there, but 15 minutes seems so unacceptable that there isn't somebody in that press corps that would have the spinal fortitude even 5 minutes is just monstrous for an answer, but let's just say 5 minutes, that somebody would stand up and basically interrupt him and say, excuse me, Mr. President, can we get back to the question here? Or even call him out and say, Mr. President, you've been talking for 5 minutes straight. Could you answer the question?
Yes.
And I know, again, I'm not in that group, but I'm still more than a little surprised that nobody's decided to be that person.
Yes, I agree with you. And my dog Winston says good morning to everybody.
I was going to say, we have an invader.
but you know, the other thing that reporters could do and they don't is they could operate more as a team department.
Yes.
And so I'm going to ask this question. He didn't answer it. You work for a different outlet, but you should pick it up. It's important. You should pick it up and ask it again. And we should all be, we should be working together to, you know, ask that, ask, get the question answered instead of I've got my question and I'm only going to ask my question. And that's one of the ways that politicians are able to, you know, move past and not answer, because reporters don't work together and they only see the value in asking their question. You know, they should, I think they should say, okay, this is important. I see that he's not answering her question, so I'm going to ask it too. Let's get the answer. That doesn't happen.
No. Then I guess somewhat conversely, there's the example of right-wing Congresswoman Nancy Mace, who was on CNN. And I mean, she is, again, she is a machine in terms of her ability to spew falsehoods. But the problem that I saw in that one was that it basically looked like there was a panel of like five or six people ganging up on her, trying to hold her accountable. Mm-hmm. But then you have five or six people talking over themselves. And you could see she was almost happy with that, because it kind of lets her, you know, not have to address any one thing. It just feels odd that so many folks in the media still haven't come up with a cohesive strategy to get honest answers out of our politicians.
Well, the other thing I would say about Nancy Mace, I've seen that that segment that she did on CNN last night, and I would say that's what she does every time she's on a show. You know that. You're booking her, so she will do that. So let's just be honest as a news organization, and sometimes I need to put news in air quotes, that we are inviting the chaos.
Exactly.
Inviting that what we saw, you know, they at least could assume that something like that might
happen. Should know better. Exactly. Yes. Jennifer, we got to go. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend. I'll see you in Chicago.
I'll see you next week, Pat.
Jennifer Schulze, Dan Schumacher's next. You're up north. Oh, yeah. Greg, my man.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, there's only one Grateful Dead song that sounds like yacht rock, and I played all the time, so I thought I'd just, you know, shake things up for a week.
When I first heard the drums and the keyboard, I thought for a second there, I'm like, there's no way the Grateful Dead covered this. There's just no way.
I mean,
but let's admit that would have been hilarious. Dan Schumacher's here as well. Dan, come on. It's a good song all the way down. Has the Grateful Dead at the shows, have they done covers? Because you've been to like 10,000 shows. Yeah. Have you ever heard them do a cover just to break things up and you go, oh, I did not expect that?
You know, they used to cover a lot of Bob Dylan songs.
Okay.
You know, they did Beatles songs. They were big fans of the Beatles. Jerry Garcia loved the Beatles. So they did a couple covers from the Beatles.
Do you think there are recordings out there, or were these? Every live show was recorded.
Oh, yeah, they're on live shows.
Greg,
shows
let's give ourselves an assignment. Let's find some Grateful Dead Beatles covers.
Okay. What was El Paso by Marty Robbins? They covered that.
We're gonna
a lot of things.
Okay. Well, good. We're gonna have some fun with that. How are things in beautiful Ashland?
I'm looking out at the Shawamigan Bay, and it's like glass out there right now. Oh, sunny skies.
So nice.
It is nice. The town is really bustling right now. I mean, there's tourists everywhere trying to finish up the summer, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, I was there 2 weeks ago. It is just gorgeous, and everybody should do a day trip at some point, and I will be up there sometime when you're up there, probably in time for fall colors that are happening. But
there you go.
First, we've got to get through this season, which, again, the only sports thing we've talked about today is I am just gleeful that the Brewers were able to split that four-game series with the Dodgers. That was, and I unfortunately didn't get to watch nearly as much of it as I'd like, but both the wins and the losses, that was a really good four-game series.
It was. I actually thought that the kid last night, the guy who's making $250 million or $500 million,
Shohei Ohtani.
You know, when he hit that ball in the beginning there, I thought that one was gone. But
it just flew.
Oh, my God, man, this guy's going to do it all himself. So,
well, he basically could. I mean, he is the Babe Ruth of our time. And he, again, he's everybody likes to watch him. But when you see him and Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts all at the top of that lineup, and then you have Devin Williams two games in a row able to get out of jams with them, it is just a thing of beauty to watch this, you know?
I think they're playing just as well with Yelich as they are.
They are, and that's the thing that, again, you feel like a bad guy admitting it, but it's mm-hmm. it's true. They're just having a great year. They did fine when Yelich was out with an injury earlier this season, and they'll be fine. Now, obviously, it'd be great if he comes back, but it says something about, I don't know, management, Pat Murphy, the front office, that yep. they were able to put, you know, this team together. It's been good so far.
I listened to an interesting stat. The Brewers are the only team in Major League Baseball that have not this year lost four in a row.
Yep. That is an amazing accomplishment.
Yep.
And you know, it only sets us up. It sets us up, Dan, that we're gonna go 0-4 in some playoff series or something.
Yeah.
No, I see. If I get it out now, see, then it can't happen.
The Brewers are doing amazing. You look at their record, especially with the Dodgers, you know, people were like, oh my God, the Dodgers are coming to town. The Dodgers are going to destroy us because they're the Dodgers and Freddie and Shohei. And their record is not much better than ours. We're playing amazingly. This is a team that in spring training was counted out because of Craig Counsell. And the fact that the Brewers are playing so well, so consistent, I think is fantastic. And, you know, honestly, I think the team with the most wins is in the AL with 72, so the Brewers are doing great with 69 victories so far this season.
Well, that that would be the Cleveland Guardians, who come to town this weekend. And Tony up in Ashland writes, "Too bad Brewers face the best team in baseball next. Go Guards!" Well, Tony, it was nice working with
blocked
you.
Blocked and reported, Tony.
Yep, exactly. Hey, another note here for you, Dan, for Cubs fans. Hall of Fame second baseman Ryan Sandberg made an announcement on Instagram yesterday saying that he is cancer-free nearly 7 months after announcing that he had metastatic prostate cancer.
Oh, wow.
He wrote a post saying, "Rang the bell this morning. We did it. We won. What a dream team. Family, doctors, friends, nurses, fans who supported myself and Margaret through the last 8 months. We feel so blessed from all the love, prayers, and thoughts and positive words that have come our way. Modern medicine has come a long way. So once again, early detection is important. Annual doctor visits, time to celebrate," said the 64-year-old Ryan Sandberg. That's got to make a lot of Cubs fans happy this morning.
He was one of my favorite players of all time. There's no doubt about it. He played the game the way it was supposed to be played. He looks like, you know, he's conducted his life the way he's played, which was with class and, mm-hmm. and great dignity. So happy for him that he's gotten through that. I'll tell you what, I'll bring up something else. What do you think if you're a Viking fan today?
I don't know. What should I be thinking? What's
J.J. McCarthy is out for the season already from blowing. They were practicing with the Browns and blew out his MCL.
Oh. See, now when we were at your party last weekend, and you had the first Packer preseason game on in the garage, and you noticed pretty much nobody was watching it. Well, first off, because you throw a really good party, but second, because it's preseason, and you almost feel like you're even looking at it. You're like you're just waiting for somebody to go down with an injury in preseason. And I get why. Of course, there's a reason why you have training camp and everything. But holy cow, if you're a Vikings fan, that's a heck of a way to wake up.
What I don't understand about the NFL is that they complain about too many preseason games, but during the preseason, they go off and scrimmage other NFL teams and risk people getting hurt.
Yeah.
I just don't get that. It doesn't make – it's an oxymoron. I don't want to play that many preseason games because of fear of hurt, but I'm going to scrimmage the Browns during the week. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, and they end up getting into all these, you know, scuffles on the field as well because, again, they're competitors, you know.
Yeah, there's people out there trying to make the team.
Former Badger Russell Wilson is expected to be in the lineup when the Pittsburgh Steelers host Buffalo tomorrow night. So Russell Wilson's still trying to stretch that career out.
Fields is pushing them, though. Fields is pushing them, but they did see that they've been using Fields in some wide receiver packages with Russell. So
really
interesting use of a great athlete and speed of that quarterback. But I still think in the end, it'll be Fields who's the quarterback for the Steelers.
Well, I mean, if anybody can pull off something like that, it would be the Steelers coach, Mike Tomlin. Oh, so we'll definitely be watching that. Hey, have a fun weekend. We will talk to you next week while I'm in beautiful Chicago.
Oh, sounds good. So, sounds good. See you guys. See you, Greg.
All right. See you later. Greg, we'll be back for Matt and Air on Air at 10 o'clock. Say hi to Jane for us.
I will do that. Say hi to Jane for us.
You did it. All right. Thank you, sir. Talk to you. Well, I will see you before too much longer down in beautiful Milwaukee.
Travel safe.
Up North News is the Wisconsin Thank You, the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network, building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Follow us at upnorthnewswi.com. And if you want to listen back to the show, check out the video version on our Facebook page or subscribe to listen by podcast. Have a great weekend. We'll see you from Milwaukee and Chicago next week.